Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything movies, TV, comics, and entertainment. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What is happening, everyone? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, oh boy, oh boy. Do we have a lot to talk about in the land of movies, TV, comics, and more?
Yes, we do.
You are tuned into the entertainment edition of the ODPH, and there is a lot to discuss this week that obviously we might not be able to fit everything in time. So, Pat, where does everybody go to keep the conversation rolling?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website, sign up, subscribe, do what you got to do on the social media accounts. They're all right there on the front page. We can't make it any easier. Also, check out the Patreon link, one tier, $2 a month. A lot of content. It's there. You got some bonus stuff that we don't air on the network here. It's right there for you. Also, check out the T Public Store link, where you never know when a sale is going on. Check out the blog section, where we got reviews dropping left and right. The classifieds, which have friends of the show, such as 3FM Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative, and many more. Also, the directory. Pad, how many providers do we have?
821,340.
I don't dispute it, because you know what? Pad is the statistician to the stars. Also, check out the music section of the show. We got a lot of great bands that are so gracious with their music to let us play here on all the ODPH/Nerd Initiative/607 Podcast Networks. So we definitely want to shout out Tom Jolu, Second Suitor, Floodland, Shot of the Robots, Brian Wolf and the Howlers, and everybody else on the page, because honestly, they're doing fantastic things. You need to go follow them. Go support them on their platforms as well. We like sharing the wealth here at the ODPH. And if there's anything else that is the ODPH, well, you can find it at ODPHpodcast.com. And if you're doing hashtags on social media, except threads, because they'll throw everything off, use the hashtag ODPHpod. Kicking off this star-studded edition of the show, I think that's the only way we can describe it.
Yes.
We have to recap a series that is now finally approaching its finale, if you will.
It's winding down.
It's kind of crazy to think about with all the hoopla behind it, if I can use that word.
Hoopla.
But it is true when we have been waiting to see about what is the future adventures of one Rick Grimes and one Michonne in the land of Robert Kirkman's infamous, I should say infamous, but honestly, let's be honest, it is an instant classic.
Yeah.
Along with Tony Moore and Charles Adlard, The Walking Dead spinoff, The Ones Who Live.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the crossover from the pages of the comic book to the land of TV was a monster hit. And when you had two of the lead cast members leave the shows, respectively, around season 9 and 10. Everybody was wondering what was going to happen. We've been waiting. We've heard about Rick was going to have a movie. Then Michonne was added. Then it went down to a TV show. We didn't know what we were going to expect. And boom, it finally decided to debut.
Yeah.
After all this time, ratings have been very well for it.
Yeah.
We're not one to kind of really focus too much in on it. But it has given us a very good temp in the room. And for a show that has been, you know, honestly, the universe itself has been kind of going on fumes the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly revving all engines up. The show has gone back to the ways of the comic book, and that's why I'm referencing the Robert Kirkman series, which if you haven't read the books, they're very much in a darker, depressing tone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very true to form of what won people over, because honestly, a zombie apocalypse, you're not going to find a lot of happiness.
No, not usually.
No, and in this situation too, you're not finding a lot of that as well. But we have to kind of break down where things have gone, and that is what we are going to be doing for this segment, because we are going to be recapping episode 4 entitled, What We? So if you're new to the ODPH, first and foremost, thank you for checking us out. Leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher. What we like to do is give you a spoiler-free statement of what we're going to be talking about. So we don't want to ruin anything for you, but you get the gist of what we're talking about, so then you can go watch it at your leisure, jump back in on this episode. Pad puts the timestamps right in the episode in the liner notes as well. Plus, we give you a countdown to duck out, because after that countdown, it's game on. We talk all spoilers. We deep dive. We hold nothing back. So you have been fair warned. So you got to do what you got to do. But all that being said, Pad, give me your spoiler-free statement on The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, Episode 4, entitled What We?
Directed by one Denai Guerrera. Got to mention that, too. No, I thought the episode was good. almost great, you know, but it was, you know, it was a good episode. I enjoyed it. The acting in this episode was an absolute masterclass. Mm-hmm. Holy hell. Like, phenomenal stuff. And this was more of a character development episode, you know, and I feel like it was one they needed because so much has gone on and so much has transpired in the prior three episodes this season. You know, honestly, for some shows, it's an entire season's worth of character progression.
Yeah.
But these characters haven't really had a chance to just sit down, assess, gauge where they're at, and figure shit out because they've just been go, 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 go. You know, to borrow the phrase from the song, living on the edge, you know, but I thought the episode was good.
This episode, you hit it right on the head. Character driven. A lot of development.
Yeah.
You're not going to see a ton of action per se in comparison to other episodes.
I will say, I thought something for the first time I've ever seen the show, at least that I can remember.
Okay.
Rick was a bit of a dick in this episode.
He was more so than we've seen him in recent seasons
yes.
with the show. Let's be clear about this because Andrew Lincoln's portrayal of Rick Grimes has gone through many evolutions.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone from reluctant leader to Ricktator to back and forth in that variation due to what has been going on with what community they've come across.
Yep.
And let alone the damage done crossing Negan's path where the body count was extremely too much for him to handle, in my opinion.
Yep.
So to see him get back to the Ricktator and even more extreme version of him because of how brainwashed he is.
It's something.
To a degree.
It's something because this is not the Rick we knew.
No, but it goes to show about how Lincoln's portrayal of him can win you over and how you know what great of an actor he is. And especially Danai Gurira, who you touched upon directed the episode, really stepped the game up and really, I'm sorry, wrote the episode. Really stepped up and took advantage of the dialogue that she had prepared and
yeah.
really got the... It's something we say from time to time. When you have a pair of actors that can really bring out the best in each other,
mm-hmm.
that's what you saw in this episode between Gurira and Lincoln.
Well, that's the benefit of having been together for so many years is they have been on this show.
Right.
But, well, The Walking Dead, I should say, not the show specifically.
Correct. But it's one of those situations where they know how to really push yeah. each other's buttons
yeah.
to get the best performance out of them.
Yeah.
That's what you got here. And I know it was a lot of talking, which some people don't like. And
yeah.
listen, that's completely fair. That's your opinion. I thought for where it needed to go with the story, it was a very good episode.
Yeah.
And where it leaves off, I do have a couple questions with it.
Okay.
But I thought overall this was probably the best episode they did all of the four thus far.
Mm-hmm.
They really got back to why you care about these characters.
Yes.
And that really translated right to the end. And that's something that fans, longtime fans of the show will appreciate more than ones that are just jumping in now.
Yeah.
But it's still a win nevertheless. So that being said, in 3, 2, 1, Pad. Talk to me.
Like I said, I thought the episode was good. The acting from both Gurira and Andrew Lincoln was an absolute masterclass and shows you don't need a whole cast of characters, you know, to get a story across. And all you need is some good writing, or in this case, it was great writing, and a brilliant setup. And that's what this episode was. It was fantastic. It was interesting to see the character development with these two and see kind of where they're at and what they're thinking. And like you said, it leaves me with a couple questions and wondering where we're going to go from here, but that's part of the journey and that's part of the fun.
I have to echo that again. I mean, the performances here were really emotional.
Yeah.
Really powerful. Like, this is the stuff that you get connected to these characters about, and you can understand why there's so much fanfare involving these two coming back to their roles respectively.
Yeah.
You now see it here. The only thing that, which you touched upon in the spoiler-free section is, there's something wrong with Rick. And what mm-hmm. fans have to remember is there has been some time since we last saw him at the bridge explosion in season 9.
6 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So he has been programmed, more or less,
uh-huh.
by the CRM to be something he's not. And it's
not... Bright ray of sunshine, and he's eating it all up.
Well, that's the whole thing, that he's unfortunately been under their control and really...
Yeah.
The emotional, psychological trauma that goes with being in this universe to begin with, then let alone...
To the point of cutting off his own hand.
Right. Like, you can see how broken he is.
Yeah.
And just whatever is going through his head. I mean, he's just, you know, he's suffered a lot of trauma. And this really showed in this episode, too.
Yeah.
Until we get right to the end where you start seeing glimpses of the old Rick as well.
Yeah.
Because where this episode jumps in, no pun intended, is Rick and Michonne jumped out of a helicopter last episode.
Yes, they did.
So they wind up landing in a river that's outside a community, I believe called Greenwood.
Yes.
And this is more or less, I don't want to say like an incubator hub of thinkers.
Sure.
But it's kind of like that vein. Like, did you get that sense?
I got the sense that it was a community of some rather smart individuals who were able to figure some stuff out and get ahead of the curve, as it were, where most people early on in the apocalypse were just trying to survive and trying to go from one place and find a city that worked and hadn't fallen yet. These folks had, you know, kind of picked up the pieces and gone, all right, let's just put our brains together because we're all really smart. Let's figure this out. Let's get this working because we're now a couple of years into this apocalypse where we're at a point where armed folks, and by that I mean folks with like military weapons and such, are having to build their own bullets because they're running out of bullets. They're having to, like, I remember that was one point in the Walking Dead mainline show that they kept having to go out further and further for supplies because everywhere in their immediate vicinity kept getting basically stripped clean. But you've got these folks who, I'm sorry, they have a fucking working Roomba.
Yeah.
Like, they've got electricity. There's a computer in the background of the room Rick and Michonne are staying in. Love this Easter egg. Running the Windows, whatever it was, pipes screensaver from back in the day. Like, they have got shit figured out there. Where the hell they went, I don't know, but they're not there.
Yeah, like I say, it's one situation that it's a thinking hub. I know that, you know, we've heard the term up here about an incubator hub for thinkers and, you know, and planning. And, like, that's what you kind of have here because everybody's trying to push the knowledge forward of how do you survive in the zombie apocalypse. And that's where you saw that technology as we know it today seemed like it was untouched here. Like, when you start going through these big towers that are out overlooking this river, you start seeing that when Rick and Michonne go in this room, there's a Roomba that's working. There's climate control for the rooms.
Like, fucking like AI assistant going.
So it's really crazy to see how this all pairs out. But unfortunately for them, time is not on their side.
Right.
That they finally get a moment to themselves in a room and they really just start venting about everything going on. And this is where things start really getting powerful because Rick knows the CRM is going to come look for them.
Because he's going to know, hey, the helicopter never checked in, so they're going to know where they went, follow that path, and track them down.
So with this in his head, he is trying to get Michonne to go away again.
Right.
She's obviously not hearing this because she is really pouring her heart out and saying, no, I came to find you.
Yeah.
If you think this was so easy, I gave up my family for you. Oh, yeah, by the way, our son.
Yeah, well, and this is after they've had an intimate night together. They wake up and they're like, all right, we got to figure this shit out. We got to figure out, you know, what we're going to do. And they open the blinds of this room they're staying in. And it's a tower situation. So it's, you know, one tower, they're in one tower. There's a tower not that far away from them. The helicopter they were in crashed into this other tower. So Rick is initially like, oh my God, you saved our lives. Michonne's first thought is, hey, we're out scot-free. Yeah, your guys are going to come looking for us, but they're going to see the crashed helicopter into the side of the fucking building because the tail engine of this helicopter is sticking out. They're going to see the fire. They're going to see the wreck and go, yeah, nobody could have survived this. So we can go off and we can do whatever the hell we want because they're going to assume we're dead.
Right.
And that's when Rick starts going, yeah, no, I'm not down with that.
No, because he is so, for lack of a better term, terrified.
Yeah.
Of the CRM.
They've got him scared.
Well, yeah, but you have to think about what they did to him.
Yeah.
And he's seen firsthand for 7 years now.
Yeah.
Like, they literally broke him.
Yeah.
As horrible as that sounds, it's the truth. So when you see this happen, yeah, you're not dealing with the Rick Grimes of old. And Michonne cannot process this because she knows the Rick that everybody else knows.
Yeah.
So you're seeing this just friction between them, and it's leading to some powerful dialogue, and this is where you have the real emotion pour out because Michonne is yelling at him about, like, we need to go, we have an excuse, and Rick is saying, no, we can't.
Yeah, what does she go? She goes, when you brought up, she mentions the son, but she first brings it up by going, we have to see our kids. And he pauses, and it's a long pause, But he goes, wait a minute, you said kids, and he, you know, plural.
Yeah.
And she goes, yeah, you have a son.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of starts sinking in a little bit about what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But Rick is still fearful of Janice and, like I say, everything going on there. So he's still not buying in, even though, like I say, you start getting this very emotional back and forth between them. And then it ultimately boils down to Michonne walks out and says, you know what? I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah, no, she doesn't know who he is, but he's sure not the Rick Grimes she knew.
Oh, yeah. So she's broken about it.
Yeah.
Like, that she's just like, I wasted all this time. And
I mean, on the one hand, I'm thinking about it. I can understand Rick's trepidation, Rick's hesitation with doing anything because Janice knows where Rick was.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't a case like with the governor or with Negan where it's simply hop in a car, make your way back, tell everybody, you know, what's going on and get them out of there before the bad guy can show up and destroy shit.
Mm-hmm.
The CRM has helicopters. Helicopters are faster than any vehicle they have access to.
Right.
So it doesn't matter how big a lead you get. They're going to catch up and she's going to know it ain't going to be a game of, oh, let's follow them through the sky at a distance and keep hidden. So they lead us to where they go. No, she knows where they are.
Mm-hmm.
She picked him up from nearby.
Yeah.
Start there and well, you'll find them.
Right. So it's a matter of they have to move quickly if they're going to move quick.
Yeah.
And you start seeing that Michonne is just like, I can't wait anymore. You need to figure your own stuff out.
She's like, I have kids to get back to because she even brings up what we saw in episode 2. Where it was her and the other guy who were trapped after the gas attack and they lost it. She goes, I lost a year of my life. She goes, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if Judith and our son are okay.
Yeah. So she leaves and Rick is sitting there fighting. And then finally he comes to and goes.
And even when Michonne is leaving and they're cutting back and forth between the two, almost like Anakin and Padme from Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment where Michonne is still holding out hope the Rick she knew is still in there.
Right.
Because there was the moment when she was walking out, she paused and she stopped and she looked behind and they cut back to Rick, making you, the viewer, go, oh, he's going to get up and he's going to go after her. And he sat there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's just processing everything as much as he can.
Yeah.
And it's a situation for him where he's tried escaping before. It didn't work multiple times.
He tried 4 times, one of which he cut his hand off.
Yeah, so obviously he's got a lot going through his head. And I mean, and during the scene, like, we didn't have that much dialogue, but you could tell what Lincoln was doing. His body language was expressing so much.
Actions speak louder than words.
Yeah, so then when he finally goes, it's the moment the fans have been waiting for.
Yep.
And as they're going, well, the CRM did show up.
Yeah, they did. They showed up. They started blowing up the other tower of the building they were in to basically erase all evidence.
Yeah.
And that caused, because of the damage, because they were shooting military-grade missiles at a building at very close range. It was doing a lot of damage. As a result, the structural integrity of the building they were in was basically zero.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to GTFO, otherwise they would be dead.
Yeah. So they have to make a dramatic escape.
Yes.
This is where the action came in for the sequence.
Yeah.
Is they're going down a stairwell, the lighting fixture crashes down and pins Michonne for a little bit.
They're arguing like a married couple.
Oh yeah, I mean they're back to basics.
Yeah.
Like with everything they've gone through.
Yeah.
This was the sign that okay, normalcy was kicking in, if we can say that with the Walking Dead universe.
As normal as things can be in this world.
Yeah, so they're making the dramatic escape, fighting through zombies left and right. And, you know, all the while, they're still just dealing with everything going on. And it's a situation where Rick is now still trying to process everything that is going on. Because even before, he was revealing about the mysterious flashbacks they were having, or dreams he was, I should say, where he kept seeing Michonne, and it was like, you know, almost like the one movie where the gentleman goes back in time and keeps meeting the love of his life.
Oh, yeah.
I'm blanking on it. Hashtag ODPHpod. Irrelevant to that point. But it's the same kind of vibe that he's reliving his romance with Michonne. And he kept saying, like, I was doing the same thing with Carl, and I was having the images where I was seeing him and seeing his face, and all of a sudden it was gone, and now I feel that that's the same way with you. And that's why he's, like, trying to fight his own feelings. But then Michonne is like, here's the iPhone engraved with Carl's photo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can we go home now? For lack of a better term.
Like, let's knock this off.
Yeah, like, I'm done with this. Like, we've now fought through zombies. We've now reconnected. We've done our thing. Like, are we done here?
Yeah.
And Rick ultimately buys in. So they wind up making a dramatic escape in a hybrid.
Yep.
And they think they got enough gas to get back to Alexandria.
There are, well, I think they do because there are multiple fuel cans in that car.
Right. But it's an interesting thing that you would say this is almost too much of a happy ending because that's where the episode ends here.
Because there's two more episodes.
Right. And that's the only thing that was kind of trepidatious for me that I'm like, this is way too happy of an ending in the Walking Dead universe.
Yep, yep, yep.
Because what I'm thinking is the CRM is going to come through and do a sweep looking for bodies.
Probably.
Because there should be a zombie Rick and a zombie Michonne.
Or at the least, Janice is going to have them do it.
Yeah, Janice is going to show up and do something.
Because she's going to know Rick. She's going to know he survived in some capacity, and she's going to have them go look. Yeah.
And this is where you're really going to see the next two episodes pick up some steam. And I don't want to say this was filler, but the big takeaway for me, and I don't know about you, Pat, this got them where they needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a heavy dialogue episode, a lot of powerful back and forth because they're really figuring out, okay, who is Rick now?
Yeah.
Is there a, Rick and Michonne?
I mean, you could call it filler. I, to me, think it was a conversation they needed to have since, they reconnected in episode two, but just Rick would not give Michonne the time of day to have that conversation because Rick is always, the planner. He's always the leader. He's got to have a plan on top of a plan on top of a plan. And every time she would want to try and discuss something or figure something out with him, he's like, yeah, okay, we'll deal with that later, but here we got to do this thing first.
Yeah.
And this was the first opportunity they'd had in however many days or weeks or whatever it is that, since they got back together that they finally gone, okay, let's breathe and figure this out.
Mm-hmm. I know. I mean, that's what translated. Like I say, it didn't really do too much to add to the plot except for the very end. That's where I'm going with the filler point. It's one of those situations that, they needed to have this talk. They finally did. Now they're going on to wherever their journey is going to end because with
in theory, Alexandria, but we'll see.
Well, that's the whole thing. I think it's just too much of a happy ending.
Oh, I agree.
Like they don't get close because of reasons. I don't know why.
I'm fully expecting next episode when I'm driving down the interstate or a highway someplace, and it's a camera shot facing the car as it's coming down the road, and then over the hill you see a helicopter and Flight of the Valkyries starts up.
Oh, I'd love that. I just think it's gonna be something like as small as a flat tire, like a nail in the road or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, really?
Because it ain't going to be they run out of gas, that's for sure.
Well, that's the little thing. Unless, of course, you get Flight of the Valkyries and they start getting missile shot at them and they got to dive out of that car.
Yeah, that could be too.
Because, we need explosions. We don't have enough on this show.
Don't have enough.
No, but I mean, I guess final grade on this episode, Pat?
I gave it a 3 out of 5. I enjoyed the episode. I wouldn't necessarily call it filler. I'd call it more of a pivot, from the first half to the second half of this season. And we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah, I have to agree with it. 3 out of 5 is a very solid grade for it. I think that it did what it needed to do.
Yeah.
It's been something that we've been waiting for. And the one downside with the season is you gave 2 episodes focused solely on Rick and Michonne's journey to get to from point A to point B.
Right.
That does take up a lot of time. So now if you're going to get to the end story, you really got to speed things up. So taking the break to do this, necessary, but a hindrance at the same point. Either way, a very solid episode to check out. So do what you got to do here, folks. Hit us up on that hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts about The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, episode 4, entitled What We? Let's have that discussion, shall we? But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You ever wondered what comics Mark from Vale Mai is into? What Zach from Left Behind's favorite MCU movies are? Well, Metalcore Nerds is the show for you. My name is Sean Mott, and here at Metalcore Nerds, we cover the latest things in pop culture, whether it be Star Wars, Marvel, DC, AEW, and everything else in between. You can listen to the show every Monday on Adobe Howl at 7 p.m. Eastern, or find it anywhere you find podcasts after it debuts on the radio station.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, and we have to deep dive into the latest entry in the final season of a Star Wars animated show that has definitely taken the world by storm, even though it has been a heavy, heavy Star Wars news week thus far.
Yeah, it has.
And we still got some days left in it. Pat, what are we going to be talking about?
Season 3 of Star Wars, The Bad Batch.
Yes, the animated saga breaking down Clone Force 99, and their last stand against the Empire has really taken off, really gone in some fun directions, and the episode that we are breaking down today had a lot going on. So we are going to be talking about episode 8, of season 3 entitled Bad Territory. You know the deal by now if you were in the first segment. So, Pat, give me your spoiler-free statement.
Thought it was a good episode. Not a whole ton going on with it, but I feel like it's setting up some stuff down the road, especially with that ending. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I love the episode.
Once that character came into play, yeah, the episode took off.
Uh-huh.
I thought otherwise it was kind of meh.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think the ending really salvaged it and really could go in some crazy directions, depending on who's on the other line of the conference call.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of good things happened, and the show has not faltered since it's returned, and this definitely keeps up that hot streak, especially because of who's involved.
Yeah.
But if you want to find out about that, well, there's only one thing you got to do. 3, 2, 1. Talk to him, Pad.
Like I said, the episode was great. It was awesome to see Fennec Shand again.
Yep.
You know, Ming-Na Wen making her return to the Star Wars
Hell
universe.
Hell yes.
You know, it was a fun episode, a little crazy, a little, I don't want to say angsty, but it was crazy. And then the ending. Oh, boy. There's a reason we didn't see who was on the other end of that line.
Right.
I don't know who it is, but I got some hunches.
No, because at last we saw the good guys, shall we say.
Uh-huh.
They were definitely trying to go investigate what the Empire had been up to. Obviously, with Project Necromancer lying in the background,
uh-huh,
there's a little more anxiety, if you will, with...
Yeah. I mean, the Empire is up to something. They know it. They're just not 100% sure what's going on. They've got some pieces to the puzzle, but they can't see the full picture.
Mm.
And they're just trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, because, you know, out of all of their reach and all of their power, I mean, Christ almighty, they're building a moon-sized space station in space as we speak.
Yeah.
That can destroy an entire planet, or will, by the time it's all said and done. You know, why are they after this one kid?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they after Omega? What is so special about Omega?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what they're trying to figure out.
Yeah, because the Batch is really trying to figure out what's happening here. They contact Phi,
yep,
who they want to get some information involving the Empire's M count.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's not familiar, Pad, what is the M count?
The M count is short for midi-chlorian count. And of course, I know some people are cringing when I hear that, but that's basically how they measure a force user's, Jedi or Sith, force ability.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher the midi-chlorians, the stronger you are in the force. And of course, when it comes to Project Necromancer, if you're not familiar with what that is a project to clone and resurrect Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah.
They obviously need for his abilities somebody who's strong in the force, because given his powers and given what he can do, he's not going to want exactly going to have some average Joe Schmo's body. He's going to want to go into one that's very gifted in the force.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they need to find a usable candidate that's got a high midi-chlorian count and clone that.
Yeah. So the Batch thinks they might know somebody that can help him out with this new information.
Uh-huh.
And that turns out to be the one and only Fennec Shand.
Yep.
Voiced by Ming-Na Wen.
Yep.
And always fantastic seeing her come back, whether
yeah,
it's voice acting or in real acting. She's amazing.
Yeah, she is.
So Hunter and Wrecker, mm-hmm, decide to go search her out.
Yep.
And they leave on Pabu, mm-hmm, Omega and Crosshair.
Yep. And they know going into this that this isn't going to be cheap.
No, they know that this obviously is going to be a costly mission in more ways than one.
Uh-huh.
And especially with Omega still coming to terms that there's a lot of interest.
Uh-huh.
She's
a hot commodity these
days.
Yeah,
because the Empire has a vested, you know, intrigue about what she is capable of.
A good sizable chunk of the Empire is looking for her.
Yes.
On top of the fact, we learn while the Batch is talking to Phi, that the Empire is now hiring bounty hunters to search for M count targets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's got to lay low.
Yeah,
she's got to stay out of sight.
Yeah, and Crosshair, who has just returned to the Batch,
still recovering from whatever the heck they did to him.
Yeah, but still valued enough that he can hold down any kind of trouble that would happen. Because once Wrecker and Hunter track down Shand, she doesn't really know what's going on, but she might know somebody who does.
Yeah, what is it? She says she hasn't taken a contract of that herself, but she might know somebody who does or who has.
Right. So she's willing to exchange information if she gets some help about her current case,
yep,
which is Sylar Saris.
Mm-hmm.
So they wind up making a interesting play to go get.
Should have read the fine print on this deal.
Yes, because they get into some very swampy territory.
Yeah, they do.
If you will. And
yeah,
the,
they do.
The creatures there, I mean, Shan says, don't, you know, keep your eye on the water and both.
I don't go in the water.
Yeah, and it's highly advised why, and we find out why.
There's like, I don't know what they are, but they're especially like space alligators.
Yeah.
In the water, and they're hungry.
Yes, they are.
They're hungry.
So after a little fun side tour where they have to take them out, they finally help get Saris,
uh-huh,
and Shan gets, you know, the win.
Yep.
And everything's like, okay, well, maybe they're on the path of the right direction.
We helped you. Now you help us. Give us the information.
Right.
And she goes, well, you didn't think I had it on me, did you?
Yeah.
She goes, I got to go get it. And there's almost this pause, and Hunter's like, that's not what we agreed to.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, listen, we can do this one of two ways. You can let me go get the information, or we can have it out right here. And she waits. They don't do anything. And she goes, good choice.
Mm-hmm. So while she takes off,
mm-hmm,
we seem to find out that, well,
She makes contact with somebody.
Yeah, she makes a contact about what she knows.
Yeah.
And it's very mysterious who's on the other line.
Yeah, because they never show we don't hear a voice of who it is.
Yes. So any speculation from your end, Pat?
Well, I think it's going to be either Boba Fett or Cad Bane. I don't think it would be, you know, and I'm just running through some of the bounty hunters we know. You know, I don't think it would be IG-88, and I don't think it'd be Bossk, because they'd show that. You know, that's not exactly that big a surprise. Aurra Sing, last we knew, was dead. I mean, she had a ship crash into the side of a mountain range in like season 2 of Clone Wars or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably Aurra Sing's dead. Anybody else, it's not that big a surprise. You know, it would make sense to be Boba. You know, if you want to draw on some of the old canon, the expanded universe, and the old books and comics, you know, that before Disney bought Star Wars, there were stories and there was legend how Boba Fett was like the most legendary Jedi bounty hunter in the galaxy, and nobody could catch a Jedi like Boba Fett. So they might draw on that and bring that into canon. This is where he kind of starts to establish how good a bounty hunter he is. But I think the more likelihood, because we're dealing with midichlorians and we're dealing with crazy stuff and well established at this point, would be Cad Bane.
Mm-hmm.
Because, listen, it's no shade on Boba Fett. Cad Bane broke into the fucking Jedi Temple.
Yeah.
So it'd make all the sense in the world that she's calling him.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait to see when that mysterious person decides to debut. Because we don't know.
We have no idea.
Yeah, because the only other point was is Omega has now helped Crosshair.
She's trying.
Yeah, with the meditation techniques.
Meditation, yeah.
Which is helping right now, because if they're going to be able to face whatever Shan tipped off,
yeah,
they're going to need 100% Crosshair.
Because it wasn't just the case of FedEx saying, hey, I need some information on the Empire's M-Count contracts. She very specifically tells whoever's on the other end of the line, I just ran into some clones who are very interested on the M-Count project.
Mm-hmm.
So it ain't hard to put two and two together these days.
Right. And that's how it wraps up, folks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, overall, solid episode, would you say?
Very solid. I'd give it probably a 3 out of 5.
I'll give it 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
I'll give it a half grade, because you know what? The episode in itself is solid, but Shan's part.
Yes.
Elevates those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And it really took this from being just a normal episode into something else.
Yeah.
It's not a like earth shattering one,
mm-hmm,
but it's one that, you know, it stands on its own 2 feet. It really is setting up for something.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to just have Shand in there for a throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be exciting times to see how the fallout happens here. In the meantime, though, hit us up on that hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts about Star Wars, The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 8, entitled Bad Territory? Let's have that discussion, shall we? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you like comic books?
What about movies and TV shows?
Well, we may be the show for you.
We're Hops Geek News, a weekly podcast that discusses comics, movies, and TV shows while featuring a beer of the week.
Every week, we chat about what we messed up on the week before, and then we dive into what we're reading and watching, as well as some news.
We then wrap it up with a geek-themed topic of the week.
You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching Hops Geek News.
Cheers.
Coming back for a very special segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. We saved the best for last this week.
Yeah, we did.
because it has been a long time.
It's been a while.
Since we saw the Children of the Atom return to the animation screen, picking up where they left off in 1997. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. This has been a long-awaited project for Marvel Animation. Debuted today as we are recording on Disney Plus. We thought we'd wait a week, but we can't wait because...
I was willing to wait a week. I mean, we even were discussing it yesterday as we were recording the sports show. I'm like, yeah, we can wait a week.
Yeah, but...
And then I watched the first two episodes this morning, and I'm like, no, we got to talk about this today.
Exactly. Same here. Not going to lie about it. You are probably going to see us get very animated about this, and rightfully so, because we are finally going to be talking about the first two episodes of the revival of X-Men 97, bringing you the latest update of the revival of the X-Men animated series that went on from 1992 to 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. We are going to be doing this like we usually do. We're going to break down the first two episodes entitled To Me, My X-Men, and Mutant Liberation Begins. So, Pad, hit me with that spoiler-free statement.
First of which, I'm glad they kept the intro theme the same. It's a
absolutely.
It's a little different in a couple of spaces if you listen carefully. I know there's a guitar riff in the middle of there that wasn't the same, that wasn't there before, but I'm glad they kept the intro this, even down to like the animation and how they come out.
Yeah.
That was fucking phenomenal. This, I will say, this is the first show Marvel/Disney have put out in quite some time, and I'm talking Star Wars as well, that I want the whole thing dropped right now because I want to binge the absolute shit out of this. And I want to see the whole thing now. And I hate that I have to wait a week for the next episode to drop, because these first two episodes were phenomenal. I was a little bit skeptical because it's a revival. You know, are you going to be able to capture the same mystique and aura of the first one? I mean, little anecdote. Boy Meets World is one of my favorite shows I watched growing up as a kid. Girl Meets World comes out, and I'm like, oh, hey, that could be good. It's got some of the same cast members. I know it's got some of the same production crew and writers from the first show working on this one. For whatever reason, just didn't capture the same magic for me personally. So I was a little nervous with X-Men. You know, okay, are they going to be able to recapture that magic that's made it stand the test of time all of these years later? Boy, were my fears assuaged within 5 minutes. These first two episodes were incredible. I cannot wait to see where it goes from here because it's going to be nuts.
The only thing I did not like about this episode is how dare Disney Plus put skip intro on this and skip the theme song.
Yeah, you're never skipping this theme song.
27 years. That's how long we've waited to go back to this universe.
Yeah.
And if anybody is not sure why this is so impactful, this is Marvel's Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, I think it came out before Batman the Animated Series.
No, 92. If anybody taking a little trip back in time, in the 80s and 90s especially, the X-Men were the hottest thing in comics. No questions asked. This is pre-MCU. This is literally the best of the best was working on the X-Books. There was like 20 of them a month.
There was a lot.
It was insane of how much was going, but they were all selling. Like, this was literally Marvel at the time. Spider-Man was doing its own thing. Clone Saga, we don't need to go there today. The Avengers were, in my opinion, an afterthought.
Right.
So the X-Men was the one brand that carried the line, and especially when they did their big re-up and split the teams into the blue and gold brand. And you had Jim Lee on the book, and you had the birth of X-Force with Rob Liefeld, and you know where every title went from there. The series really captured the best of those that era,
right?
And brought it out. They actually pulled off a successful Dark Phoenix adaptation.
Yes, they did.
Which live action, unfortunately, has not been able to do.
Holy shit, these came out around the same time, so I did some digging. Episode 1 of Batman the Animated Series, The Cat and the Claw, Part 1.
93, right?
92.
Okay.
First aired on Saturday, September 5th, 1992. X-Men the Animated Series, Episode 1, Night of the Sentinels, Part 1, aired on Saturday, October 31st,
okay,
1992. So these were going on at the same time, which I got to admit, I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
The other one of two, because I was curious if these came out around the same time, Spider-Man the Animated Series would not come out for another 2 years.
Right.
That first episode, Night of the Lizard, would debut on Saturday, Saturday, November 19th, 1994. And because I also knew this was a thing, I had to look it up. Iron Man, the animated series, did not come out until also 1994.
Yeah, the Iron Man one, well, that was syndicated, if I wasn't mistaken.
I think so.
Yeah, no, because they used to pair that.
Yeah, that one started airing on Saturday, September 24th, 1994.
Yeah.
Those are the Marvel ones I remember from growing up around the same time.
Yeah. No, because I remember Iron Man and Fantastic Four were like a separate thing. And then Hulk was in the mix of it anyways.
Yeah.
Because honestly, what you remember about this, kind of circling back to what we're going to, the X-Men set the bar.
Yeah.
When they did this on Fox, they set the bar.
Yeah, because you think about other adaptations and other cartoon shows before that, you know, especially like Super Friends in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You had the characters there and you had their arch villains and whatever, but it wasn't ever anything necessarily super crazy. It was like, oh, hey, we're going to steal, you know, the money from the mint. You know, we're going to capture the mayor and hold the city ransom. You know, it was kind of the stuff of the era that like you're used to. And even into some of the stuff with like the G.I. Joe and stuff from the 80s. And I'm not shitting on G.I. Joe by any means.
Mm.
But you look at what was in the content of the episodes compared to the stuff you see in the 90s with Batman, with X-Men, and all the other, and Superman the Animated Series, and Justice League, and everything else that came out around the same time. It's a night and day difference.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first time with these two shows, because they came out around the same time, that I think the writers of both shows went, all right, we know this is going to be for a multi-generational audience. This isn't just going to be something kids watch. This is going to be something that parents watch with their kids because they grew up on the cartoon or the comics of the age, and now they want to introduce their kids to it. I mean, hell, this is how I got into the characters was these cartoons.
Yeah,
and they turned around and went, let's not treat them as if they're stupid or childish. Let's make it serious.
And especially, too, with the X-Men, I mean, they took some of the classic stories and brought them to life.
Yes, they did.
Even dabbling around introducing certain characters like Morph.
Yeah.
So when you can pull off that magic, I mean, there's a certain level where you're scared to go back because you don't want to tarnish the legacy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I don't think we'll ever see another Batman cartoon like we saw with Batman the Animated Series.
No.
I think that one is the most iconic one. I don't think you might see an influence here and there, but never a direct sequel, I don't think. And in this situation, too, you know, this is a very interesting project that Marvel decided to do.
Yeah.
So to see them come back and do this, it's simply extraordinary.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
I did.
So that said, I mean, what can you say about this other than this is such a breath of fresh air?
Oh, my God.
As far as Marvel animation goes. And they have had some other solid shows, too. Avengers Assemble comes into play.
Yeah.
But to go back and capture the essence and the feel of the animated series, and literally it seems like other than a little dip in here with animation styles to a degree,
yeah,
this is picture perfect. We picked up literally right where we left off.
About a year after, but yeah.
But I'm excited to get into it. This definitely gets a high mark, but you'll have to hear the high mark after we get into spoiler talk. So, Pad, in 3, 2, 1.
Listen, for the folks at Marvel, because I have a feeling you listen to the show.
They do.
Please, 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 please release the theme song on streaming platforms. I have both Spotify. I don't pay for Spotify, but I use a free version. But I do have Apple Music. I would love to put this on my phone and be driving to the work listening to this song because I feel like that would just make my day all that much better. Thank you. These first two episodes were incredible. You know, admittedly, I have seen all of the original X-Men animated series. It's been a couple years. You know, I watched it probably in right around the same time Disney Plus came out because I'd seen most of the first couple seasons on Netflix years ago, probably, God, like 2010, 2011 when they were there, but they got taken off and I never found them again online. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to get to see the whole thing all the way through. And I watched all the way through now. And I didn't do a rewatch just because I never got around to it, busy with other stuff. I like how they started it off and took it as if, you know, almost no time has passed. And they treated it as, hey, if you've seen the old stuff, you're good. If you didn't or you haven't seen it in a while, we got you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a wonderful thing to do in the first two episodes. Absolute perfection.
Yeah, I fully agree. Like, this was so new viewer friendly and seasoned veteran watcher friendly too.
Yeah.
Because where we jump in, it's a year since the Professor Xavier assassination.
Uh-huh.
And the public has really more or less gone along the same idea of Xavier's dream of mutants and humans living in co-humanity.
Well, now they're being a little more receptive to it.
Yeah, like I say, it's a little more along the same lines. And one of thing that has lingered around has been the Friends of Humanity.
Yeah.
And this is a very anti-mutant militant group. And the comics was actually led at one point by Grayson Creed, the son of Sabretooth. And
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's a whole different ball of wax right there. But you have this group appear, and they do kidnap a mutant named Roberto, who we do know from the comics as Sunspot, one of the original New Mutants on the original team of the 1980s.
Yep.
So you do see this big action sequence involved where the X-Men make the save. Storm comes crashing through the skyline. Looked amazing as all hell. Cyclops, one of the most badass entrances.
Jesus.
And you know, for anybody that complains about him being boring and what such, like within the first 5 minutes, he's already won you over.
Yep.
Completely. So they wind up making a dramatic save along with Bishop, who's still with the team at this point. So
reasons? Well, I'm sure we'll find out.
Yep, but you know what? Not mad at all.
No.
Not mad at all. So during this melee, though, they do find out the Friends of Humanity have Sentinel technology.
They're using what look like Mega Man cannons.
Yes.
On their arms, but they're Sentinel cannons, and they've also got a freaking arm of a Sentinel in there, despite the fact that all of the Sentinel tech should have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm. So they wind up saving the day, but obviously if Sentinel tech is lurking around...
Yeah, they're not happy with
that. The X-Men need to find out what happened. So there is a regroup at the base... And you do see one thing that the show does, you know, explore a little more than I think you've seen in other alliterations.
Uh-huh.
You do see the family dynamic and the normalcy of the mutants.
Yeah.
Because you have a great sequence where Rogue and Gambit are working on making lunch.
Yep. They weren't there. They were more focused on lunch.
Yeah. Wolverine's playing basketball or, you know, being outside. So you do see, like, that more normalcy play in and the factor. And then plus, they have also introduced that Jean Grey is fully pregnant with who will be eventually Cable in due time. So you do see the time has definitely passed and the X-Men are not where they were at one point. But Cyclops comes back and he obviously, if you know his history in the comics, he has always been Xavier's most loyal student.
Yep.
He is fully bought into the dream. Now, granted, in recent years, he's kind of swayed toward the Magneto side of things.
Yeah.
But that's an evolution of character, and there's been reasons for it. But this kind of throws back to that original Cyclops.
Yep.
And he's not handling what has gone on in Xavier's passing, that there still needs to be an X-Men. There still needs to, you know, to uphold the dream.
There's still a hope for this fight.
Yes. And, I mean, that is something that will always be a theme with X-Men stories no matter what.
Yeah.
And that it's one of their best themes. They don't quit. Even, you know, like I say, the dream, until the dream is reality, nobody wakes up, so to speak. So that being said, they have to figure out, okay, somebody's got this tech out there. There's one person that would have it, and that's Peter Henry Gyrick.
Yep.
Who is the one who killed Xavier.
Yep.
So they wind up going to confront him in prison. Jean Grey does a mind sweep of him.
All the while, Scott is there, Cyclops is there, trying to convince him, hey, give us the information. Because I think if I remember right, he said he's in there for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
His sentence is 25 years. If you give us the information we need and help us, I can talk to some folks and get that knocked down to 10 years. And he makes the comment of, oh, look at how far you've come having some connections now. And he basically tells them to F off.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's...
A surprise.
No, if you've ever read anything involving Henry Peter Gyrick in the 80s, he's one of the worst. And it doesn't matter if it's Avengers or X-Men. He's
about as friendly and nice as sour milk.
Yeah, but what happens with Jean is she gets the information. It leads them to one, Bolivar Trask.
Well, this is all the while she's reading his mind and then has this psychic episode, psychic vision, whatever it is, where she sees what she thinks is the future, and she's in a graveyard. She's now no longer pregnant. She freaks out about that. She's in costume, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
When she starts minding him, she's in her street clothes, but then she changes into her costume mid-read or whatever it is. She then shows up in this world She's in her costume. She's not pregnant. She sees the kid, picks the kid up, kid's in the blanket. All the meanwhile, you see the head of Master Mold come down and basically go, yeah, I'm going to kill everyone,
mm-hmm.
and destroys the entire world. And she's like, we need to find him in now because I just saw something and I don't like what I saw.
Yeah. So they do get the information where Trask is building his sentinels.
In the Sahara.
Yes. With a broken Master Mold.
Yeah.
Being the head piece.
Yeah.
And then you do see that obviously the X-Men do what they do best.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best fight scenes you're going to see, whether it's Storm turning the ground into glass.
Yeah, the sand into glass. Holy shit.
Which, how insane was that?
And they brought back the old adage, big fight starts, kick in the theme music.
Yep.
Oh.
It played perfectly. Beast going inside the Sentinel and working it like a marionette.
Witty comeback. Witty one-liner from Beast. Mm-hmm. Oh, was perfect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, the lineup they have for this team, I mean, you have Rogue, Gambit, Beast,
yep.
Bishop, Wolverine, yep. Jubilee, who, I mean, she's on the team, but it's all right. Because it's early 90s, still learning yep. Jubilee.
Yep. Yep.
And Storm and Cable, or I'm sorry, Cyclops and Jean Grey. Like, you have a stacked lineup.
And, right? I love how they go to start the fight. Storm's hanging back, and before she turns the ground into ice, you've got the Master Mold is there, but then the other like salvage sentinels are there,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting ready to start the fight with the X-Men. And, Scott just says, show them the tell them the forecast or whatever it is he says.
Yeah.
And you just see it cut to several of the sentinels, and they just go Omega level threat detected,
mm-hmm.
and that's when she comes in. And I was just like, what a badass entrance.
Oh yeah, it couldn't have been any more perfect for Storm.
Yeah,
even with the evolution of Morph,
yeah,
who is really mastered his powers and became such a vital part of defeating the Sentinels.
Yeah.
And like I say, it was weird because it threw me off, because he definitely has probably the most different look,
yeah,
than anybody.
Yeah.
He kind of looked more like Caliban, if you know that mutant.
Yeah, a little bit.
Than Morph, but still, he was the same old Morph, cracking jokes, doing what he needed to do. And like I say, it's a fantastic fight scene that caps everything off. So once they defeat Trask and it's turned over, the X-Men are the public heroes.
Yeah.
So
we're indebted to you, the X-Men, yet again.
Mm-hmm. And this is where Cyclops goes back to the X-Mansion.
Yeah.
And him and Jean have been pondering about taking off to raise their son in peace.
You know, and they're obviously nervous about this because they're two of the originals. Mm-hmm. Can the team survive without them?
Right. But as they return to the X-Mansion, there's somebody in the study.
Yeah, the perimeter alarms go off and Beast gets warned that, hey, there's somebody here who shouldn't be.
Yes. And as they go inside the study, they find out that somebody has the last will and testament of one Charles Xavier.
Uh-huh.
And that is who, Pad?
Magneto.
Yes. So this ends episode one.
We do find out that Xavier has left everything, and I mean everything, to Magneto.
Well, this plays right into the comics.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as Xavier and Magneto have been enemies, they've been the best of friends too.
Yeah.
And they both want the best for mutant kind. They just have different approaches to do it, to put it
sure.
mildly.
Yeah.
And Magneto has done this in the comics occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, around issue 200 of Uncanny X-Men.
Right.
Where Xavier was presumed dead. A different story than what they're doing here on the show. I believe he was in the Shi'ar universe at the time. Like he was considered dead and gone. But Magneto decides to pick up Xavier's dream and is willing to sacrifice everything he's done to honor his fallen friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what you get here, because the X-Men are in shock to see him, and he basically says, Xavier left me everything. You're my X-Men. We're going to continue his dream.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean and Scott are stunned by this, because obviously they've had the most interaction with him.
Yep.
And they're saying, well, you know what? We might have to put everything on hold to keep an eye on him right now to make sure everything's on the up and up. And one of the actions that Magneto does is he is transporting mutants to Genosha,
mm-hmm.
for protection. Now, Genosha has always been a mutant safe haven.
Yep.
So this is a situation where he is, you know, shipping the Morlocks there too. And there's,
yep.
You know, like I say, if you know anything about the Morlocks, who are big, or had more of a bigger profile, I would say, in the 90s run.
Yeah. Featured in a couple episodes in the cartoon. Yeah.
Right. So you see that they go there And obviously,
because Magneto, that's how the second episode starts, is Magneto goes and saves them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like a little flashback before he showed up at the X-Mansion, but he goes in and he saves them from the Friends of Humanity. And then it cuts to a news broadcast report with like, oh, there's been reports all over the world that former mutant terrorist, you know, Magneto has been seen around the world saving people. Mm-hmm. And what does this mean? And, you know, has he changed? Has he turned over a new leaf? And what does this mean? And then it cuts to a military planning room base someplace. They look about as thrilled as you would expect.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to think that way. Magneto has almost killed the human population how many times?
It's a long rap sheet.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's just how he's been, is just he's willing to make sure the mutants stay alive by any possible way. And he's not afraid to cross a line. And that's what makes him such a compelling villain.
Yeah.
Because his motives are true.
Yeah.
And they're not exactly evil, but...
And he brings that up later in the episode.
Yeah. But it's something that, obviously, the X-Men, it goes against the dream that they've been doing. So it is a situation where they have to kind of adjust, and especially with him acting differently than we've ever seen him.
Yeah.
And if anybody has any questions about his costume, that is the one they did in the 80s.
Yep.
And they kept it, which I was shocked at, because I was like...
I dig it, though.
Yeah, you know, it's so 80s. Like, that's the only thing. That's the easy
I don't
way
expect it to stick around.
No, it shouldn't.
Just because the thing we should know, too, is when they went to do the intro for this, he was included in the lineup with the X-Men at the start.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. But was still at the end of the intro sequence where it's the X-Men and then the Brotherhood going to clash against each other. And there's that final shot of, you know, Xavier doing the thing with his mind and then Magneto with the fist and the magnetism kicking in. But he was still in his old costume.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt he'll go back to that at some point.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you know the comics, he does. So, yep. But there's reasons he will. And I think they're going to go this route just after what we've seen here, because they decide to recreate, I believe it's X-Men 200 itself, where the trial of Magneto, where he puts himself in front of the UN, and he goes, if you all don't believe me, I'm willing to do this.
Yeah, because what is it? He's talking to the X-Men, and basically we find out Cyclops and Jean want to stay because they don't trust Magneto any further than they can throw him.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that while he's there, helicopters show up.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's a UN task force or whoever it is. They never outright say, but I think it might have been the UN. But they show up on the doorstep of the Xavier Institute, and Magneto's ready to like throw hands and let's go. Let's fight this out. The rest of the X-Men are like, hold on. We don't, you know, these are the good guys. We don't fight with the good guys. So the forces come out. Mind you, they've taken precautions. It's astounding how they figured out where the hell he is, by the way, because he's only been on the scene for maybe 5 minutes. But then, no, so they show up and they're like, hey, we've taken precautions. Don't even try to take our guns. They're like plastic alloy or whatever they are. They're not metal.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, that's a shame. You thought of everything. And then he picks up the helicopters that aren't made of plastic. They are made of metal. And he starts turning them towards the forces and basically gets talked out like, hey, if you come with us and you stand trial, you know, and you're found innocent, we'll let you go scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, is that your promise? And the woman from the UN goes, that's how due process works. And he goes, all right, I'll go with you.
Mm-hmm. So they set up for the trial of Magneto,
which thrills the general population to no end.
Well, I think that this is a telling sign. I mean, obviously, Magneto's crimes against humanity are very well known.
They're more friendly towards the mutant cause, but it does have a limit.
Mm-hmm.
And that limit right now is Magneto.
Mm-hmm. And the Friends of Humanity are not exactly too excited about
it. Oh, they see an opportunity. They're going to exploit that.
And this is where they throw in a character some people might not know about. And that's the Executioner,
mm-hmm.
who was a 90s villain that was introduced during... Marvel used to do events for their annuals every summer.
Okay.
And one summer, they were introducing new characters in each annual.
Uh-huh.
Executioner was one. It was a former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who was discredited because of mutants and really turned into what he is. He hunts down mutants. And he would be more or less like the easiest equivalent, but not the same type of character. Prometheus for DC.
Ah, okay. Looked it up. He first showed up, Executioner showed up in the Uncanny X-Men Annual number 17 from June 1993.
Yep. So, yeah, during that point, because it was all new blood and they were introducing characters left and right, he showed up in there. And, I mean, he was a one and done for the most part.
Sure.
I think he's appeared a couple times after. I don't really follow the character because... I mean, honestly, he's somebody that has weaponry that thinks he can take out mutants.
Yeah.
He plays the part well here because he's sent in to kill Magneto.
Uh-huh.
Because, or at least depower him.
Well, we don't know what he's going to do because all he says in the buildup to breaking into the UN, or at least getting past the frontline defenses, is I'm going to have only one shot at this. And it's while he's holding a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably 1+1, it seems like he's going to try and kill him.
Yeah. So they do wind up making this play into the UN, the Friends of Humanity Against the X-Men.
Yep.
During this time, Jean Grey goes into labor.
Well, yeah, because while Wolverine's getting ready to suit up and go down and help, Jean goes into labor.
Yeah, so he has to get her to the hospital. Rogue flies Cyclops there to be there with the baby. And unfortunately, the doctor on duty is not exactly cooperative.
Which goes against the oath they take, mind you.
Yes. So Rogue has to absorb his knowledge and deliver the baby.
Yep.
Which is wild, but you know, it's an interesting plot point they add to the story.
Yeah.
So like I say, it was something going on because with Rogue away, obviously the forces defending Magneto are weakened.
Yeah.
Storm winds up being caught in the crossfire and she actually makes a sacrifice to jump in front of a blast that's meant for Magneto and she takes it.
Because she thinks it's going to kill him.
Yeah. But it turns out it depowers her.
Yeah.
So Storm is now human. Magneto understands this, and the Executioner realizes he screwed up. I believe the saying is he messed around. Now he's going to find out.
Uh-huh.
And Magneto grabs him and the UN brass that's still there, flies everybody into space and basically...
Low orbit.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And basically says, I'm going to say this one last time. My patience is wearing thin.
Uh-huh.
But... I am still adhering to Xavier's dream. If you decide to get stupid again, you will get a stupid prize.
Well, this is all the while he stood in front of the UN with like basically the entire world united against him.
Power, depowered collar and all.
And basically got and stood up and said, listen, I was first imprisoned because my people had a different name for God.
Mm-hmm.
And then just basically went on about, which if you know Magneto's story, you know his history.
Right.
And he kind of alludes to it and he goes through it, but he goes, listen, I did some heinous things. Yes, but that's because there were heinous things done to my people. And when he says my people, he's referring to the mutants. That he's like, listen, anything I ever did was in response to what was done to us. And he basically lays out, like, yeah, you came up with power dampening collars and you came up with all these special prisons and stuff, and you threw people in there unjustly without a trial. Like, you expected me to just lay down and take this?
Yeah. No, like I say, Magneto hit it right on the head, but he also, like I say, was illustrating his point about how committed he was to honoring Charles' legacy.
Yeah.
So he does get this pardon. And he's now free to go do what he needs to do for the X-Men.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, you have Jean Grey, obviously giving birth to one Nathan Charles Summers, a.k.a. Cable, for a future episode. And you do have a surprise at the end. Now, Storm leaves because she's now a human, needs to find herself.
Yep.
And this does play into the story Life Death, which I didn't realize was the name of the one way back when, but this is all dealing with their powers. So viewers are going to be in for a real treat when this goes down.
Right.
So she has now left the team. It appears Sunspot is staying because Jubilee has talked him into at least...
Well, I don't think he's staying. He's going to stay in contact.
Yeah.
He gives her his card and basically says, hey, you ever need me, here's my card.
Yeah, but like I said, I got a feeling he'll be sticking around a little bit longer than we thought. But... That being said, they get a surprise at the door.
Well, yeah, because Jean's reading off the letter to the X-Men, and we're seeing Storm leave. And Morph makes the comment, don't worry, she's just got to figure some stuff out, get her head sorted, and then she'll be back. She'll be back by the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
The doorbell rings, and he goes, oh, hey, what do you know? Ahead of schedule. She's already here. And he opens the door, and he goes, hey! And then he goes, oh, because at the door is Jean.
Yes. Or, as comic fans know, that's Madeline Pryor.
Probably.
Now, the question I have is, okay, if anybody is not familiar with the story of Jean Grey, Madeline Pryor, and Scott Summers, it is the definition of messy. It literally is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a key point that is missing from this story from the comics. And that key point is Jean Grey was dead.
Right.
In the Hudson Bay River after the Dark Phoenix saga.
Okay.
She was in a cocoon. She was gone. Presumed dead. Scott Summers left the X-Men, and he wound up marrying Madeline Pryor.
Bum, bum, bum.
Who is revealed later to be a clone of Jean Grey.
Bum, bum, bum.
By Mr. Sinister.
Bum, bum, bum. Who's in the title sequence?
Yes. So,
it's not a spoiler. If you pay attention, you see him.
Yeah. So I don't understand how they're going to explain point A to point B.
Well, we're here for the ride.
Though. I'm here for the ride, though. But that's the first thing I thought of. I go, how the hell are you going to do Madeline Pryor? Because the whole point is Scott's married to her, but leaves his wife to go back for Jean.
Right.
Like it's like I say, it's a messy storyline in the comics. It's going to be a lot cleaner for this, but still, questions. And Pad?
Reasons.
Either way, though, man, two great episodes kick everything
off. Phenomenal episodes.
I mean, what, 5 out of 5 easy?
Easily. 6 out of 5.
Yeah.
9 out of 5.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go on that extra star rating, folks. That is how good this show is. Two episodes in, they definitely hit it on the head, combining a lot of the new and the old themes, so to speak. Like I say, shocked to see they used Executioner. That's a deep dive. Like, that's almost like bringing back Adam Extreme, which if you know, you know. So, and if he shows up in this, I want my victory lap, folks. I'm just going to put it out there. Either way, though, hit us up on that hashtag. Hashtag ODPHpod. X-Men 97 just came out. 2 episodes on Disney+. Give us your thoughts. Did you love them? Did you hate them? And why? Because we are going to be recapping this as the season goes on. Because, man, this is going to be something to watch. Trust me. But that being said, we're going to take our final break. We'll be back.
Hey, this is Scott Snyder, and you better listen to the ODPH podcast, or I'm coming for you, and Batman is coming for you.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Pad, what you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. Most of them all trailers.
Yes.
Because a lot of trailers dropped. The first of which is a trailer for a video game that I admit I knew was coming, but I didn't know what the hell it
they
was going to be.
They got really quiet about this. Holy after shit. We the initial announcement.
Yeah, so we knew that a game was coming from Amy Hennig, who is the famous game developer. I know she was worked on Naughty Dog and the Uncharted games, among a whole host of others. I knew she was working on a Marvel game, but I didn't know what. Well, we found out today because the trailer got released for Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra. Now, this game is obviously set, as the title gives way, 1943. It's in Europe, World War II. So, obviously, Captain America going to feature very heavily in this game, but also seen in this trailer, Black Panther. Not really too sure what it's going to be about other than, hey, it seems like they're going to be traversing across Europe during World War II, doing missions. We don't know anything about what the game style is like or what the gameplay is like. There wasn't even any real gameplay footage shown in this. I'm willing to bet this was all pre-rendered cutscenes. You know, so this isn't even an indication on how the game will look. It's super early. We did get a release date of 2025 as the release date, so keep an eye out for more. But I'm interested. I will say that.
I'm all in about this.
Yeah.
This looks great.
Then we got a trailer for the upcoming film from 20th Century Studios, that being Alien Romulus. Of course, this is the next movie in the Alien franchise, where the description I'm reading off the 20th Century Studios YouTube video, it says, quote, the sci-fi horror thriller takes the phenomenally successful Alien franchise back to its roots. While scavenging the deep ends of a derelict space station, a group of young space colonizers come face to face with its most terrifying life form in the universe. The film stars Kaylee Spaney from Priscilla, David Johnson from Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, Archie Renaud from Shadow and Bone, Isabella Merst from The Last of Us, Spike Farron from Aftersun, Eileen Wu, Fady Alvarez from Evil Dead and Don't Breathe, directs from a screenplay he wrote, and frequent collaborator Rodo Sayugas from Don't Breathe 2. So it looks interesting. You know, it looks like it's a back to basics for the Alien franchise, you know, not necessarily in the Prometheus or whatever the hell the next one was called. I forget what it was called. Alien Covenant, I think is what it was called. It looks more like it's more back to the, hey, there's guys in a really tight, cramped space and the aliens are hunting them.
It looks okay.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been a huge Alien fan, per se.
Yeah.
Like, if that's your fandom, cool. Like, I'm not taking a shot by any means.
Right.
But for me, it looks okay.
Sure.
Like, I'm not saying
Scream. I need to see more.
Yeah, I mean, that's my whole thing, too. Like, I want to see some more out of it. Like, it looked okay. Like, I hate repeating myself like that. But that's the honest truth. It just looked okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't seen the original Alien movies. I did see Prometheus, which I enjoyed the fuck out of. That movie was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I did see Alien vs. Predator as a kid. Liked it as a kid. Now, not so much. And then we won't even talk about the Alien vs. Predator sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But then the sequel, Alien Covenant, after Prometheus, that was meh. Like, I saw it. I didn't hate it. I haven't really seen it since, so it's kind of how I am. But no, I might give this one a shot. We'll see. You know, I need to see more. And then last and certainly not leastly, we got the trailer for the next Star Wars live action series that is dropping on June 4th. I believe, yes, it is. It is a 2-episode premiere, and that is The Acolyte.
Yes.
Oh, my God. This show looks fucking amazing. Of course, it has Carrie-Anne Moss in it, who you know from Matrix fame, among a whole host of others. This show, I cannot wait. Should also note, because it's been well documented all over the internet the last couple days, did not use the VFX wall, whatever the hell that thing is called, that they used for Mandalorian.
Mm.
Did their own thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, it looks really good, though.
No, that looks like it's living up to the hype. I can't see how that falters, honestly.
Now, the thing people should keep in mind with this is set during the High Republic era of Star Wars. So that is like 300 years to, I want to say it's 20-some-odd years or so before A New Hope. This one's episode specifically, though, is taking place 100 years before Star Wars A New Hope. So likely, in all likelihood or possibility, the only character we would possibly see from the movies we know is Yoda. Because when Yoda dies, he's like 900 years old.
Yeah.
So no Luke, no Obi-Wan, no Anakin, no, you know, no Jar Jar, no, you know, Rex, no Ahsoka, you know, no nothing. The only possibility, Yoda. So we'll see what happens. I'm super excited, though.
This looks dark. It looks brooding.
Yeah.
I'm all in. Like, this is something different. And I want, and if you know me well, I like seeing different things.
Uh-huh. I am excited, too, because I know the Star Wars website put out like some little character descriptions of some of the characters and what they're about and whatnot. And the one character I know they said has a light whip, which if you're a fan of the old comics and books from the expanded universe days, should be very excited. Basically, it's a lightsaber, but it's a whip.
Hmm.
And I'm super fucking excited to see them actually bring that into any form of production, because my knowledge, that was only ever in the books and in comics. They never used it in like a video game or certainly a movie or TV show.
Yeah.
So the fact we're going to get a light whip in Star Wars in live action, fucking give it to me.
Yeah, no, I'm all in about this.
And then lastly, certainly not leastly, it was announced by the folks over at HBO, Max, whatever the fuck you want to call it these days.
Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yes, Warner Brothers Discovery, that season 2 trailer is going to be coming tomorrow as we record. So that is going to be on Thursday, March 21st. And then we also got a really cool poster for season 2, which of course is coming in June.
Can't wait to see this. Matt Smith is the best on this show.
Yeah, he is.
Just saying, so anybody says otherwise. I know Julio from The Contrarian is going to shoot a line in. He knows Matt Smith is literally the franchise of this show.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what we're going to get. I mean, obviously, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
So we got to kind of see if they can recapture the magic. I think so. I mean, they've taken their time. I mean, obviously, there's some other stuff going on. Well, I'm
saying there's some other stuff that happened in between season 1 and now that hampered things.
Yeah, but it's good to see what we're going to get coming back. And like I say, Matt Smith and his role on this show is phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
So we have got to talk some comics.
Yes, we do.
And actually got some late-breaking news here from Marvel.
Hey.
Shout out to our friends over at Marvel Comics sending the press release to us. A new Goblin rises to take out the Sinister Six in Amazing Spider-Man 51.
Is it MJ because she's tired of Peter's shit?
They have not said, but according to the press release, and we're quoting everything from that via Marvel Comics, Amazing Spider-Man 51 kicks off a transformative arc for Zeb Wells' hit run that debuts a shocking new Goblin born from the sins of Norman Osborn. So the art looks good. Ed McGuinness is on it. Sinister Six lineup looks very, very classic, so I'm excited to check this out. When it drops in June, so June 5th is going to be a big day if you're into Spider-Man. Very excited to see what we're going to be doing there.
Should be exciting. Then for my comic picks this week, from the folks over at DC, you've got Nightwing, issue number 112. Is Tom Taylor still writing?
For now, yes.
Yes, he is. So it's still fucking incredible. This one reads, Nightwing continues to struggle with his recent woe. Why can't he leap? and what's causing it. And Batman continues his investigation into it. Is he any closer to figuring out the root of this new dilemma before there are some serious consequences? Plus, part two of the period saga. Around 7 centuries ago, the Grayson name was born, a child of the Black Death. The story of revenge reaches its epic conclusion.
It's like you said, it's Tom Taylor.
Tom Taylor, can't go wrong.
Yeah, that series has been on point ever since.
So. Then from Brian Buccellato, it is Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, issue number 6. This says, the best-selling clash between the DCU and the MonsterVerse continues as a mysterious beacon is activated and is drawing Godzilla and his Titan brethren toward it. But who, or what, controls the beacon? What secret has Lex Luthor kept under wraps that could change the dynamic of the entire battle? I know they kind of gave away the lead, but I was hoping it'd be like Mr. Mixoplick just for shits and giggles.
Yeah. No, this series has been so good. Buccellato is killing it on this.
Yeah.
Also has another big book out this week, Midlife, number 6 for Image Comics, too. You definitely want to go check that out as well.
Then lastly, and certainly not leastly, from the folks over at DC, Superman issue number 12 from Joshua Williamson. This one reads, Superman is the brains while Lex is the brawn. As they team up to battle the Lex Luthor Revenge Squad for the fate of Metropolis, Lex has sworn to Superman that he is a changed man. But to what lengths will he go to stop his enemies? And what danger from deep space rapidly makes its way towards Earth? Close quote. I'm not really sure, but it's been a while since we've seen Doomsday.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of stuff between now and Absolute Power.
Yep.
So I don't want to overshoot and say Doomsday. But I will say this. What Joshua Williamson has been doing with this, mm-hmm. and I know he's had a couple different artists on as well, they've been killing this.
Right.
This is one of the best Superman runs I've seen in recent memory.
Then switching over to the folks over at Marvel, you've got Invincible Iron Man issue number 16 from Gary Dugan. D-Day is here, and there is absolutely a main event. Iron Man versus Fei Long. Get ready for the biggest clash of armor you've ever seen. Plus, Tony gets some new suits. Close quote.
Heard a lot of good things about this.
This whole run has been spectacular. And I cannot wait to read this issue and see where they go with next. Then you've got Resurrection of Magneto, issue number 3 from Al Ewing. This one reads, Falls the Shadow. In the cold, dark rooms beyond death, there are terrible things. Annihilators, adversaries, and a king of shadows who seeks a new soul to live in. The time of easy miracles is over. For Storm and Magneto, all roads back to life are hard. And this is the hardest road of all.
This series has been a very, very trippy one.
Uh-huh.
And it appears, I mean, I'm guessing, because like I say, I have not read the last issue. I'm thinking that's Shadow King.
Probably.
Which,
King of Shadow, yeah. Yeah.
You got to think, like, there's a lot of, with bringing somebody back from the dead the way they're doing it in that series, uh-huh. there's a lot of moving parts, to put it politely.
Right.
I wouldn't doubt he's involved.
Yeah. Then for the folks at Marvel and Star Wars, you've got Jango Fett issue number 1. Yes, folks, Jango Fett's getting his own miniseries here. This one reads, Jango Fett embarks on a brand new mission as seen in Star Wars Revelations. Ethan Sachs, who worked on Star Wars Bounty Hunters, and Luke Ross, who did work on Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters and Star Wars Dark Droids, team up to continue the legacy of one of the greatest bounty hunters, Jango Fett. A bounty to find, a mystery to solve, a treaty at risk, all this with Aura Sing in the mix. Cannot go wrong when it's Star Wars, and especially Jango Fett. Jango Fett's underrated these days.
Very underrated.
Very underrated. Then over with more Star Wars, you've got Star Wars The High Republic, issue number 5 with Kevin Scott. Monster and Apprentice, an exciting new arc begins. Lightsabers clash as Keeve Trennis finally finds what she's been searching for in the Nihil Occlusion Zone. What is the secret to the ancient ruin? And can Keeve trust Lorna D when she needs her the most? The Jedi's deepest fears manifest as a face from the past makes a shocking appearance. Spoiler alert, don't trust Lorna D any further than you can fucking throw her. Just my opinion. Then from the wonderful folks at Dynamite Comics, Gargoyles issue number 10, Greg Weisman still writing. This one reads, at last, the Manhattan Clan is reunited, and it's a good thing too, as they're going to need all hands on deck to prevent New York's crime bosses from combining their resources to wreak havoc on the city. It's the final issue of this series, as well as a prelude to new adventures to come. Super excited to read this. This whole run with Greg Weisman has been fan-fucking-tastic.
No, like I say, this is right up your wheelhouse, and I've heard nothing but good things from other Gargoyles fans about this. Like I say, everybody's in really love with this series.
Yes.
My picks this week, going to DC Comics yet again. Arguably the best superhero comic on the block, Batman Superman World's Finest. So this is number 25. And this is an interesting take because a couple issues back, Mark Wade and Dan Mora did, or there was a fill-in artist for Dan Mora, did the first meeting between Superman and Batman.
Okay.
This time for 25, we go back and we meet the first appearance of Lex Luthor and the Joker.
Oh.
And it's a fun, fun story there. Like, it's really something cool to see play out. So if you're into that, like I say, it's classic vintage storytelling. It's a lot of good things there. And the backup story involving Wade and Mora there is setting the tone for what's coming on the next arc. So very cool stuff there. Over at Image Comics via Skybound Entertainment, Cobra Commander number 3, Joshua Williamson, Andrea Milana. they are killing it on the series. This one is the one that's more horror-based, and there's a lot of intense moments here. I love what they're doing here, establishing how crazy Cobra Commander is. It's seriously right up my alley. This is what you need to do for Cobra, so I love seeing that. And anything they're doing, Energon Universe is absolutely killing it. And then over at Comixology Originals, Duck and Cover number 3, Scott Snyder, Rafael Albuquerque. And this is the wild story that's based in the 1950s where a nuclear blast goes off. It's set in the Cold War time, so there's a lot of crazy things happening.
Yeah.
And this spirals, man. Like, this goes into a lot of different directions. So I am telling you right now, this is going to be one you don't want to miss at the digital shops. And speaking of digital shops, too, I definitely want to give a shout-out to our sideshow, Turn a Page, on Nerd Initiative YouTube. Yesterday, we talked to Jason Lowe, who is the artist behind The All-Nighter, which is also on Comixology Originals and is out via print via Dark Horse Comics. And he is the writer of The Sentry Pad.
Ooh, really?
Yes, which your reaction said it all. I actually really love this story.
Okay.
And you know why I'm giving you that reaction.
Yeah.
What's my take on The Sentry?
You love him about as much as you do, Fake Cap.
I'm
blanking on the name. And Ben Reilly.
Yep. My trifecta of snappable heroes.
Send me a DM, and I will tell you where to mail any of those books to Ken.
Yes, and I will tell you where to go recycle them. Because in all honesty, though, what Jason did with this run for The Sentry, he did a really cool take on it. It's not involving the character of Bob Reynolds per se, but you'll understand it as you read it. And I really love the direction he went in. It was a great conversation. So definitely go check those books out at the comic shops. Go check out the video on Nerd Initiative. And, you know, maybe one of these days, we might have to talk. You know, maybe we'll do like a charity thing. Like, we'll raise some money and then we'll do a deep dive into like a Ben Reilly story on Nerd Initiative, Turn a Page. Oh, we'll do something fun like that. But either way, hit your comic shops this week because, you know, honestly, there's nothing better than walking into a comic shop on a Wednesday and seeing all the new comics and going picking up and then having those healthy discussions on social media. Like, if you go over to odphpodcast.com, because if it's anything and everything, it is the ODPH. That's where you can find it. That's it for this week of entertainment. So, Pad, tell the folks a final farewell.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Ken. Thank you as always for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.